future. I don't know all about anything. She smiled again. Happiness, triumph, victory. Reacher asked, Where has he gone?
Like I tell you that.
When are you joining him? Wherever he is.
In a couple of days.
I could follow you. She smiled again, impregnable.
Wouldn't do you any good.
The waitress came by, and Reacher asked her for coffee and steak. When she had gone away again, he looked across at Lucy Anderson and said, There are others in the position you were in yesterday. There's a girl in town right now just waiting.
I hope there are plenty of us.
I think maybe she's waiting in vain. I know that a boy died out there a day or two ago. Lucy Anderson shook her head.
Not possible. I know that none of us died. I would have heard.
Us?
People in our position.
Somebody died.
People die all the time.
Young people? For no apparent reason? She didn't answer that, and he knew she never would. The waitress brought his coffee. He took a sip. It was not as good as Mrs. Gardner's, either in terms of brew or receptacle. He put the mug down and looked at the girl again and said, Whatever, Lucy. I wish you nothing but good luck, whatever the hell you're doing and wherever the hell you're going.
That's it? No more questions?
I'm just here to eat. He ate alone, because Lucy Anderson left before his steak arrived. She smiled and slid out of the booth and walked away. More accurately, she skipped away, light on her feet, happy, full of energy. She pushed out through the door, and instead of huddling into her shirt against the chill, she squared her shoulders and turned her face upward and breathed the night air like she was in an enchanted forest. Reacher watched her until she was lost to sight, and then gazed into space until his food showed up. He was through eating by 10:30 and headed back to the motel. He dropped by the office to pay for another night's stay. He always rented rooms one night at a time, even when he knew he was going to hang out in a place longer. It was a reassuring habit, a comforting ritual intended to confirm his absolute freedom to move on. The day clerk was still on duty, the stout woman, the nosy woman. He assembled a collection of small bills and waited for his change and said, Go over what you were telling me about the metal plant.
What was I telling you?
Violations, real crimes. You were interested in why the plane flies every night? The woman said,
So you are a cop?
I used to be. Maybe I still have the old habits. The woman shrugged and looked a little sheepish, maybe even blushed a little.
It's just silly amateur stuff. That's what you'll think.
Amateur?
I'm a day trader. I do research on my computer. I was thinking about that operation.
What about it?
It seems to make way too much money. But what do I know? I'm not an expert. I'm not a broker or a forensic accountant or anything. Talk me through it. Business sectors go up and down. There are cycles to do with commodity prices and supply and demand and market conditions. Right now, metal recycling as a whole is in a down cycle, but that place is raking it in.
How do you know?
Employment seems to be way up.
That's pretty vague.
It files taxes, federal and state. I looked at the figures to pass the time. And because you're a nosy neighbor, Reacher thought.
And? He asked.
It's reporting great profits. If it was a public company, I'd be buying stock, big time. If I had any money, that is. If I wasn't a motel clerk.
Okay.
But it's not a public company. It's private. So it's probably making more than it's reporting.
So you think they're cutting corners out there? With environmental violations?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Would that make much difference? I thought rules were pretty slack now anyway.
Maybe.
What about the plane?
The woman glanced away.
Just silly thoughts.
Try me.
Well, I was just thinking, if the fundamentals don't support the profits, and it's not about violations, then maybe there's something else going on.
Like what?
Maybe that plane is bringing stuff in every night to sell. Like smuggling?
What kind of stuff?
Stuff that isn't metal.
From where?
I'm not sure.
Reacher said nothing. The woman said,
See, what do I know? I have too much time on my hands, that's all. Way too much. And broadband. That can really do a person's head in.
She turned away and busied herself with an entry in a book, and Reacher put his change in his pocket. Before he left, he glanced at the row of hooks behind the clerk's shoulder and saw that four keys were missing. Therefore, four rooms were occupied. His own, Lucy Anderson's, one for the woman with the large underwear, and one for the new girl in town, he guessed. The dark girl, who he hadn't met yet, but who he might meet soon. He suspected that she was going to be in town longer than Lucy Anderson, and he suspected that at the end of her stay she wasn't going to be skipping away with a smile on her face. He went back to his room and showered, but he was too restless to sleep. So as soon as the stink of the bar fight was off him, he dressed again and went out and walked. On a whim, he stopped at a phone booth under a streetlight and pulled the directory and looked up David Robert Vaughn. He was right there in the book. Vaughn, D.R., with an address on 5th Street, Hope, Colorado, 2 blocks south. He had seen 4th Street. Perhaps he should take a look at 5th Street, too. Just for the sake of idle curiosity. Chapter 33 Fifth Street was more or less a replica of Fourth Street, except that it was residential on both sides. Trees, yards, picket fences, mailboxes, small neat houses resting quietly in the moonlight. A nice place to live, probably. Vaughn's house was close to the eastern limit, nearer Kansas than despair. It had a plain aluminum mailbox out front, mounted on a store-bought wooden post. The post had been treated against decay. The box had Vaughn written on both sides with stick-on italic letters. They had been carefully applied and were perfectly aligned. Rare, in Reacher's experience. Most people seemed to have trouble with stick-on letters. He imagined that the glue was too aggressive to allow the correction of mistakes. To get 7 letters, each side level and true, spoke of meticulous planning. Maybe a straight edge had been taped in position first and then removed. The house and the yard had been maintained to a high standard, too. Reacher was no expert, but he could tell the difference between care and neglect. The yard had no lawn. It was covered with golden gravel, with shrubs and bushes pushing up through the stones. The driveway was paved with small, riven slabs that seemed to be the same color as the gravel. The same slabs made a narrower, winding walkway to the door. More slabs were set here and there in the gravel, like stepping stones. The bushes and the shrubs were neatly pruned. Some of them had small flowers on their branches, all closed up for the night against the chill. The house itself was a low, one-story ranch, maybe 50 years old. At the right-hand end was a single attached garage, and at the left was a T-shaped bump-out that maybe housed the bedrooms, one front, one back. Reacher guessed the kitchen would be next to the garage, and the living room would be between the kitchen and the bedrooms. There was a chimney. The siding and the roof tiles were not new, but they had been replaced within living memory, and had settled and weathered into pleasant maturity. A nice house. An empty house. It was dark and silent. Some drapes were halfway open, and some were all the way open. No light inside except a tiny green glow in one window. Probably the kitchen, probably a microwave clock. Apart from that, no sign of life, nothing. No sound, No subliminal hum, no vibe. Once upon a time, Reacher had made his living storming darkened buildings, and more than once it had been a matter of life or death to decide whether they were occupied or not. He had developed a sense, and his sense right then was that Vaughn's house was empty. So where was David Robert? At work? Possibly. Maybe they both worked nights. Some couples chose to coordinate their schedules that way. Maybe David Robert was a nurse or a doctor, or worked night construction on the interstates. Maybe he was a journalist or a print worker involved with newspapers. Maybe he was in the food trade, getting stuff ready for morning markets. Maybe he was a radio DJ, broadcasting through the night on a powerful AM station, or maybe he was a long-haul trucker, or an actor, or a musician, and was on the road for lengthy spells, maybe for months at a time. Maybe he was a sailor, or an airline pilot. Maybe he was a state policeman. Vaughn had asked, "Don't I look married?" "No," Reacher thought. "You really don't. Not like some people do." He found a leafy cross street and walked back north to Second Street. Vaughn's truck was still parked where he had left it. The diner's lights were spilling out all over it. He walked another block and came out on First Street. There was no cloud in the sky. Plenty of moon. To his right there was silvery flatness all the way to Kansas. To his left, the Rockies were faintly visible, dim and blue and bulky, with their north-facing snow channels lit up like ghostly blades, impossibly high. The town was still and silent and lonely. Not quite 11:30 in the evening, and no one was out and about, no traffic, no activity at all. Reacher was no kind of an insomniac, but he didn't feel like sleep. Too early. Too many questions. He walked a block on First Street and then headed south again toward the diner. He was no kind of a social animal either, but right then he wanted to see people, and he figured the diner was the only place he was going to find any. He found four. The college girl waitress, an old guy in a seed cap eating alone at the counter, a middle-aged guy alone in a booth with a spread of tractor catalogs in front of him, and a frightened Hispanic girl alone in a booth with nothing. Dark, not blonde, Vaughn had said, sitting around and staring west like she's waiting for word from despair. She was tiny. She was about 18 or 19 years old. She had long, center-parted, jet-black hair that framed a face that had a high forehead and enormous eyes. The eyes were brown, and looked like twin pools of terror and tragedy. Under them were a small nose and a small mouth. Reacher guessed she had a pretty smile, but didn't use it often, and certainly hadn't used it for weeks. Her skin was mid-brown, and her pose was absolutely still. Her hands were out of sight under the table, but Reacher was sure they were clasped together in her lap. She was wearing a blue San Diego Padres warm-up jacket with a blue scoop-neck T-shirt under it. There was nothing on the table in front of her. No plate, no cup. But she hadn't just arrived. The way she was settled meant she must have been sitting there for 10 or 15 minutes at least. Nobody could have gotten so still any faster. Reacher stepped to the far side of the register, and the college girl waitress joined him there. Reacher bent his head at an angle, universal body language for, "I want to talk to you quietly." The waitress moved a little closer and bent her own head at a parallel angle like a co-conspirator. "That girl," Reacher said, "didn't she order?" The waitress whispered, "She has no money." "Ask her what she wants. I'll pay for it." He moved away to a different booth, where he could watch the girl without being obvious about it. He saw the waitress approach her, saw incomprehension on the girl's face, then doubt, then refusal. The waitress stepped over to Reacher's booth and whispered, "She says she can't possibly accept." Reacher said, Go back and tell her there are no strings attached. Tell her I'm not hitting on her. Tell her I don't even want to talk to her. Tell her I've been broke and hungry, too. The waitress went back. This time, the girl relented. She pointed to a couple of items on the menu. Reacher was sure they were the cheapest choices. The waitress went away to place the order, and the girl turned a little in her seat and inclined her head in a courteous little nod, full of dignity, and the corners of her mouth softened like the beginnings of a smile. Then she turned back and went still again. The waitress came straight back to Reacher, and he asked for coffee. The waitress whispered,
"Her check is going to be $9.50. Yours will be $1.50.
Reacher peeled a 10 and 3 ones off the roll in his pocket and slid them across the table. The waitress picked them up and thanked him for the tip and asked,
"So when were you broke and hungry?"
"Never," Reacher said. "My whole life I got 3 squares a day from the army, and since then I've always had money in my pocket."
"So you made that up just to make her feel better?"
"Sometimes people need convincing."
"You're a nice guy."
"Not everyone agrees with that."
"But some do."
"Do they?"
"I hear things."
"What things?" But the girl just smiled at him and walked away. From a safe distance, Reacher watched the Hispanic girl eat a tuna melt sandwich and drink a chocolate milkshake. Good choices, nutritionally. Excellent value for his money. Protein, fats, carbs, some sugar. If she ate like that every day, she would weigh 200 pounds before she was 30, but in dire need on the road, it was wise to load up. After she was finished, she dabbed her lips with her napkin and pushed her plate and her glass away and then sat there just as quiet and still as before. The clock in Reacher's head hit midnight, and the clock on the diner's wall followed it a minute later. The old guy in the seed cap crept out with a creaking, arthritic gait, and the tractor salesman gathered his paperwork together and called for another cup of coffee. The Hispanic girl stayed put. Reacher had seen plenty of people doing what she was doing, in cafes and diners near bus depots and railroad stations. She was staying warm, saving energy, passing time. She was enduring. He watched her profile and figured she was a lot closer to Zeno's ideal than he was. The unquestioning acceptance of destinies. She looked infinitely composed and patient. The tractor salesman drained his final cup and gathered his stuff and left. The waitress backed away to a corner and picked up a paperback book. Reacher curled his fist around his mug to keep it warm. The Hispanic girl stayed put. Then she moved. She shifted sideways on her vinyl bench and stood up all in one smooth, delicate motion. She was extremely petite, not more than 5 nothing, not more than 90-some pounds. Below the T-shirt, she was wearing jeans and cheap shoes. She stood still and faced the door, and then she turned toward Reacher's booth. There was nothing in her face, just fear and shyness and loneliness. She came to some kind of a decision and stepped forward and stood off about a yard and said,
"You can talk to me if you really want to."
Reacher shook his head. "I meant what I said."
"Thank you for my dinner."
Her voice matched her physique. It was small and delicate. It was lightly accented, but English was probably her primary language. She was from Southern California, for sure. The Padres were probably her home team. Reacher asked, "You okay for breakfast tomorrow?" She was still for a moment while she fought her pride, and then she shook her head. Reacher asked, "Lunch? Dinner tomorrow?" She shook her head. "You okay at the motel?"
"That's why. I paid for 3 nights. It took all my money."
"You have to eat." The girl said nothing. Reacher thought, $10 a meal is $30 a day. 3 days makes 90 plus 10 for contingencies or phone calls makes 100.
He peeled 5 ATM fresh 20s off his roll and fanned them on the table. The girl said,
I can't take your money. I couldn't pay it back.
Pay it forward instead. The girl said nothing. You know what pay it forward means?
I'm not sure.
It means years from now you'll be in a diner somewhere and you'll see someone who needs a break. So you'll help them out. The girl nodded.
I could do that.
So take the money. She stepped closer and picked up the bills.
Thank you.
Don't thank me. Thank whoever helped me way back, and whoever helped him before that, and so on.
Have you ever been to despair?
4 times in the last 2 days.
Did you see anyone there?
I saw lots of people. She moved closer still and put her slim hips against the end of his table. She hoisted a cheap vinyl purse and propped it on the laminate against her belly and unsnapped the clasp. She dipped her head and her hair fell forward. Her hands were small and brown and had no rings on the fingers or polish on the nails. She rooted around in her bag for a moment and came out with an envelope. It was stiff and nearly square, from a greeting card, probably. She opened the flap and pulled out a photograph. She held it neatly between her thumb and her forefinger and put her little fist on the table and adjusted its position until Reacher could see the picture at a comfortable angle.
Did you see this man?
She asked. It was another standard 1-hour 6x4 color print. Glossy paper, no border. Shot on Fuji film, Reacher guessed. Back when it had mattered for forensic purposes, he had gotten pretty good at recognizing film stock by its color biases. This print had strong greens, which was a Fuji characteristic. Kodak products favored the reds and the warmer tones. Their camera had been a decent unit with a proper glass lens. There was plenty of detail. Focus was not quite perfect. The choice of aperture was not inspired. The depth of field was neither shallow nor deep. An old SLR, Reacher thought, therefore bought second-hand or borrowed from an older person. There was no retail market for decent film cameras anymore. Everyone had moved into digital technology. The print in the girl's hand was clearly recent, but it looked like a much older product. It was a pleasant but an exceptional picture from an old SLR loaded with Fuji color and wielded by an amateur. He took the print from the girl and held it between his own thumb and forefinger. The bright greens in the photograph were in a background expanse of grass and a foreground expanse of T-shirt. The grass looked watered and forced and manicured and was probably in a city park somewhere. The T-shirt was a cheap cotton product, being worn by a thin guy of about 19 or 20. The camera was looking up at him, as if the photograph was being taken by a much shorter person. The guy was posing quite formally and awkwardly. There was no spontaneity in his stance. Maybe repeated fumbles with the camera's controls had required him to hold his position a little too long. His smile was genuine, but a little frozen. He had white teeth and a brown face. He looked young and friendly and amiable and fun to be around and completely harmless. Not thin, exactly. He looked lean and wiry. Not short, not tall. About average in terms of height. He looked to be about 5'8". He looked to weigh about 140 pounds. He was Hispanic, but as much Mayan or Aztec as Spanish. There was plenty of pure Indian blood in him, that was for sure. He had shiny black hair, not brushed, a little tousled, neither long nor short, maybe 1.5 or 2 inches with a clear tendency to wave. He had prominent cheekbones. He was casually dressed and casually turned out. He hadn't shaved. His chin and his upper lip were rough with black stubble. His cheeks and his throat, not so much.
Young. Not much more than a boy.
The girl asked,
Did you see him?
Reacher asked.
What's your name?
My name?
Yes.
Maria?
What's his name?
Rafael Ramirez?
Is he your boyfriend?
Yes.
How old is he?
20.
Did you take this picture?
Yes.
In a park in San Diego?
Yes.
With your dad's camera?
My uncle's. How did you know?
Reacher didn't answer. He looked again at Rafael Ramirez in the photograph, Maria's boyfriend, 20 years old, 5'8", 140. The build, the hair, the cheekbones, the stubble. The girl asked,
Did you see him?
Reacher shook his head. No, I didn't see him. Chapter 34. The girl left the diner. Reacher watched her go. He thought that an offer to walk her back to the motel might be misinterpreted, as if he was after something more for his $100 than a feel-good glow. And she was in no kind of danger, anyway. Hope seemed to be a safe enough place. Unlikely to be packs of malefactors roaming the streets, mainly because nobody was roaming the streets. It was the middle of the night in a quiet, decent place in the middle of nowhere. So Reacher let her walk away, and sat alone in his booth and roused the college girl from her book and had her bring him more coffee.
"You'll never sleep," she said.
"How often does Officer Vaughn swing by during the night?" The girl smiled the same smile she had used before, right after she said,
"I hear things." "At least once,"
she said, and smiled again. He said, "She's married," she said.
"I know."
She took the flask away and headed back to her book and left him with a steaming mug. He dipped his head and inhaled the smell. When he looked up again, he saw Vaughn's cruiser glide by outside. She slowed as if she was noting that her truck was back, but she didn't stop. She slid right by the diner's window and drove on down Second Street. Reacher left the diner at 1 o'clock in the morning and walked back to the motel. The moon was still out. The town was still quiet. The motel office had a low light burning. The rooms were all dark. He sat down in the plastic lawn chair outside his door and stretched his legs straight out and put his hands behind his head and listened to the silence, eyes wide open, staring into the moonlight. It didn't work. He didn't relax. "You'll never sleep," the waitress had said. But not because of the coffee, he thought. He got up again and walked away, straight back to the diner. There were no customers. The waitress was reading her book. Reacher stepped straight to the register and took Vaughn's truck keys off the counter. The waitress looked up, but didn't speak. Reacher stepped back to the door and caught it before it closed, headed out across the sidewalk to the truck, unlocked it, got in, started it up. 5 minutes later, he thumped over the line and was back in despair. The first 12 miles of empty road were predictably quiet. The town was quiet, too. Reacher slowed at the gas station and coasted down to 20 miles an hour and took a good look around. Main Street was deserted and silent. No cars on the streets, nobody on the sidewalks. The police station was dark. The rooming house was dark. The bar was closed up and shuttered. The hotel was just a blank facade, with a closed street door and a dozen dark windows. The church was empty and silent. The green grounding strap from the lightning rod was stained gray by the moonlight. He drove on until the street petered out into half-colonized scrubland. He pulled a wide circle on the packed sand and stopped and idled with the whole town laid out north of him. It was lit up silver by the moon. It was just crouching there, silent and deserted and insignificant in the vastness. He threaded his way back to Main Street, turned left and headed onward, west, toward the metal plant. The plant was shut down and dark. The wall around it glowed
ghostly white in the moonlight. The personnel gate was closed. The acres of parking were deserted. Reacher followed the wall and steered the truck left and right until its weak low beams picked up the Tahoe's tracks. He followed their giant figure eight all the way around the plant and the residential compound. The plantings were black and massive. The windsocks hung limp in the air. The plant's vehicle gate was shut. Reacher drove slowly past it and then bumped up across the truck road and drove another quarter turn through the dirt and stopped where the figure eight's two loops met, in the throat between the plant's metal wall and the residential compound's fieldstone wall. He shut off his lights and shut down the engine and rolled down the windows and waited. He heard the plane at 2:05 in the morning, a single engine far in the distance, feathering and blipping. He craned his neck and saw a light in the sky way to the south, a landing light. It looked motionless, like it would be suspended up there forever. Then it grew imperceptibly bigger and started hopping slightly, side to side, up and down, but mostly down. A small plane on approach, buffeted by nighttime thermals and rocked by a firm hand on nervous controls. Its sound grew closer, but quieter, as the pilot shed power and looked for a glide path. Lights came on beyond the fieldstone wall, a dull reflected glow. Runway markers, Reacher guessed, one at each end of the strip. He saw the plane move in the air, jumping left, correcting right, lining up with the lights. It was coming in from Reacher's left. When it was 300 yards out, he saw that it was a smallish, low-wing monoplane. It was white. When it was 200 yards out, he saw that it had a fixed undercarriage with fairings over all three wheels, called pants by airplane people. When it was 100 yards out, he identified it as a Piper, probably some kind of a Cherokee variant, a four-seater, durable, reliable, common and popular. Beyond that, he had no information. He knew a little about small planes, but not a lot. It came in low, left to right across his windshield in a high-speed rush of light and air and sound. It cleared the fieldstone wall by 6 feet and dropped out of sight. The engine blipped and feathered, and then a minute later changed its note to a loud, angry buzzing. Reacher imagined the plane taxiing like a fat, self-important insect, white in the moonlight, bumping sharply over rough ground, turning abruptly on its short wheelbase heading for its barn. Then he heard it shut down, and stunned silence flooded in his windows, even more intense than before. The runway lights went off. He saw and heard nothing more. He waited 10 minutes for safety's sake and then started the truck and backed up and turned and drove away on the blind side with the bulk of the plant between him and the house. He bumped through the acres of empty parking, skirted the short end of the plant, and joined the truck route. He put his headlights on and got comfortable in his seat and settled to a fast cruise on the firm, wide surface, heading out of town westward, toward the MPs and whatever lay 40 miles beyond them. Chapter 35. The MPs were all asleep, except for two on sentry duty inside the guard shack. Reacher saw them as he drove past, bulky figures in the gloom, dressed in desert camos and vests, MP brassards, no helmets. They had an orange nightlight burning near the floor to preserve their night vision. They were standing back to back, one watching the southern approach, one the northern. Reacher slowed and waved, then hit the gas again and kept on going. 30 miles later, the solid truck road swung sharply to the right and speared north through the darkness toward the distant interstate. But the old route it must have been built over meandered on straight ahead, unsignposted and apparently aimless. Reacher followed it. He bumped down off the flat, coarse blacktop onto a surface as bad as Despair's own road. Lumpy, uneven, cheaply top-dressed with gravel on tar. He followed it between two ruined farms and entered an empty, spectral world with nothing on his left and nothing on his right, and nothing ahead of him except the wandering gray ribbon of road and the silver moonlit mountains remote in the distance. Nothing happened for 4 more miles. He seemed to make no progress at all through the landscape. Then he passed a lone roadside sign that said, Halfway County Route 37. A mile later, he saw a glow in the air. He came up a long rise, and the road peaked and fell away into the middle distance, and suddenly, laid out right in front of him, was a neat checkerboard of lit streets and pale buildings. Another mile later, he passed a sign that said, Halfway Township. He slowed and checked his mirrors, and pulled to the shoulder and stopped. The town in front of him was aptly named. Another trick of topography put the moonlit Rockies closer again. The hardy souls who had struggled onward from despair had been rewarded for 40 miles of actual travel with an apparent 100 miles of progress. But by then, they would have been wise enough and bitter enough not to get carried away with enthusiasm, so they had given their next resting place the suitably cautious name of Halfway, perhaps secretly hoping that their unassuming modesty would be further rewarded by finding out that they were, in fact, more than halfway there. Which they weren't, Reacher thought. 40 miles was 40 miles, optical illusions notwithstanding. They were only a fifth of the way there. But the wagons had rolled out of despair with only the optimists aboard, and the town of Halfway reflected their founding spirit. The place looked crisp and bright and livelier in the dead of night than despair had in the middle of the day. It had been rebuilt, perhaps several times. There was nothing ancient visible. The structures Reacher could make out seemed to be 70s stucco and 80s glass, not 19th century brick. In the age of fast transportation, there was no real reason why one nearby town rather than another should be chosen for investment and development, except for inherited traits of vibrancy and vigor. Despair had suffered and Halfway had prospered, and the optimists had won, like they sometimes deserved to. Reacher coasted down the rise into town. It was 3:15 in the morning. Plenty of places were lit up, but not many were actually open. A gas station and a coffee shop was about all at first sight. But the town and the county shared the same name, which in Reacher's experience implied that certain services would be available around the clock. County police, for instance. They would have a station somewhere, manned all night. There would be a hospital, too, with a 24/7 emergency room. And to serve the gray area in between, where perhaps the county police were interested and the emergency room had failed, there would be a morgue. And it would be open for business night and day. A county town with a cluster of dependent municipalities all around it had to provide essential services. There was no morgue in Hope or Despair, not even a meat locker, Vaughn had said, and presumably other local towns were in the same situation. And shit happened, and ambulances had to go somewhere. Dead folks couldn't be left out in the street until the next business day, usually. Morgues were normally close to hospitals, and a redeveloped county seat would normally have a new hospital, and new hospitals were normally built on the outskirts of towns where land was empty and available and cheap. Halfway had one road in from the east, and a spider web of 4 roads out north and west, and Reacher found the hospital 1/2 mile out on the second exit road he tried. It was a place the size of a university campus, long, low, and deep, with buildings like elongated ski chalets. It looked calm and friendly, like sickness and death were really no big deal. It had a vast parking lot, empty except for a cluster of battered cars near a staff entrance, and a lone shiny sedan in a section marked off with ferocious warning signs, M.D. parking only. Steam drifted from vents from a building and back. The laundry, Reacher guessed, where sheets and towels were being washed overnight by the drivers of the battered cars, while the guy from the shiny sedan tried to keep people alive long enough to use them in the morning. He avoided the front entrances. He wanted dead people, not sick people, and he knew how to find them. He had visited more morgues than wards in his life, by an order of magnitude. Morgues were usually well hidden from the public, a sensitivity issue. They were often not signposted at all, or else labeled something anodyne, like special services. But they were always accessible. Meat wagons had to be able to roll in and out unobstructed. He found Halfway's County Morgue in back, next to the hospital laundry, which he thought was a smart design. The laundry's drifting steam would camouflage the output of the morgue's crematorium chimney. The place was another low, wide, chalet-style building. It had a high steel fence and a sliding gate and a guard shack. The fence was solid, and the gate was closed, and there was a guard in the shack. Reacher parked off to one side and climbed out of the truck and stretched. The guard watched him do it. Reacher finished stretching and glanced around like he was getting his bearings, and then headed straight for the shack. The guard slid back the bottom part of his window and ducked his head down, like he needed to line up his ears with the empty space to hear properly. He was a middle-aged guy, lean, probably competent but not ambitious. He was a rent-a-cop. He was wearing a dark, generic uniform with a molded plastic shield like something from a toy store. It said security on it. Nothing more. It could have done double duty at an outlet mall. Maybe it did. Maybe the guy worked two jobs to make ends meet. Reacher ducked his own head toward the open section of window and said, "I need to check some details on the guy Despair brought in yesterday morning." The guard said,
"The attendants are in sack."
Reacher nodded as if he had received new and valuable information, and waited for the guy to hit the button that would slide the gate. The guy didn't move. Reacher asked, "Were you here yesterday morning?" The guard said,
"Everything after midnight is morning."
This would have been daylight hours.
"Not me, then. I got off at 6.
"So, can you let me through to ask the attendants?"
"They change at 6, too.
They'll have paperwork in there." The guard said,
"I can't."
"Can't what?"
"Can't let you through. Law enforcement personnel only. Or paramedics with a fresh one."
Reacher said, "I am law enforcement. I'm with the Despair PD. We need to check something."
"I'd need to see some credentials."
"They don't give us much in the way of credentials. I'm only a deputy."
"I'd have to see something."
Reacher nodded and took the big guy's pewter star out of his shirt pocket, held it face out with the pin between his thumb and forefinger. The guard looked at it carefully. "Township of Despair, police deputy."
"All they gave us," Reacher said.
"Good enough for me," the guy said, and hit the button. A motor spun up, and a gear engaged and drove the gate along a greased track. As soon as it was 3 feet open, Reacher stepped through and headed across a yard through a pool of yellow sulfur light to a personnel door labeled Receiving. He went straight in and found a standby room like a million others he had seen. Desk, computer, clipboards, drifts of paper, bulletin boards, low wood and tweed armchairs. Everything was reasonably new, but already battered. There were heaters going, but the air was cold. There was an internal door closed, but Reacher could smell sharp, cold chemicals through it. Two of the low armchairs were occupied by two guys. They were white, young, and lean. They looked equally equipped for either manual or clerical labor. They looked bored and a little irreverent, which is exactly what Reacher expected from people working night shifts around a cold store full of stiffs. They glanced up at him, a little put out by the intrusion into their sealed world, a little happy about the break in their routine.
"Happy?"
one of them said. Reacher held up his pewter star again and said, "I need to check something about the guy we brought in yesterday." The attendant who had spoken squinted at the star.
To spare? Reacher nodded and said, Male DOA, young, not huge. One guy heaved himself out of his chair and dumped himself down in front of the desk and tapped the keyboard to wake the computer screen. The other guy swiveled in his seat and grabbed a clipboard and licked his thumb and leafed through sheets of paper. They both reached the same conclusion at the same time. They glanced at each other, and the one who had spoken before said, We didn't get anything from the spare yesterday.
You sure about that?
Did you bring him in yourself?
No.
You sure he was DOA? Maybe he went to the ICU.
He was DOA, no doubt about it.
Well, we don't have him.
No possibility of a mistake?
Couldn't happen.
Your paperwork is always 100%?
Has to be. Start of the shift, we eyeball the toe tags and match them against the list. Procedure. Because people get sensitive about shit like dead relatives going missing.
Understandable, I guess.
So, tonight we've got 5 on the list and 5 in the freezer. 2 female, 3 male, not a one of them young, and not a one of them from despair.
Anywhere else they could have taken him?
Not in this county. And no other county would have accepted him.
The guy tapped some more keys.
As of this exact minute, the last despair stiff we had was over a year ago. Accident at their metal plant. Adult male all chewed up, as I recall, by a machine. Not pretty. He was so spread out, we had to put him in 2 drawers.
Reacher nodded, and the guy spun his chair and put himself back to against the desk with his feet straight out and his elbows propped behind him.
Sorry.
Reacher nodded again and stepped back outside to the pool of sulfur light. The door sucked shut behind him on a spring closer. To assume makes an ass out of you and me. Ass, you, me. The classroom jerks at Rucker had added, you absolutely have to verify. Reacher walked back across the concrete and waited for the gate to grind open a yard and stepped through and climbed into Vaughn's truck. He had verified. Absolutely. Chapter 36. Reacher drove a mile and stopped at Halfway's all-night coffee shop and ate a cheeseburger and drank 3 mugs of coffee. The burger was rare and damp, and the coffee was about as good as the Hope Diner's. The mug was a little worse, but acceptable. He read a ragged copy of the previous morning's newspaper all the way through, and then jammed himself into the corner of his booth and dozed upright for an hour. He left the place at 5 in the morning, when the first of the breakfast customers came in and disturbed him with bright chatter and the smell of recent showers. He filled Vaughn's truck at the all-night gas station and then drove back out of town, heading east on the same rough road he had come in on, the mountains far behind him, and the dawn waiting to happen up ahead. He kept the speedometer needle fixed on 40 and passed the MP post again 52 minutes later. The place was still quiet. 2 guys were in the guard shack, one facing north and one facing south. Their nightlight was still burning. He figured Reveille would be at 6:30 and Chow at 7. The night watch would eat dinner and the day watch would eat breakfast, all in the same hour. Same food, probably. Combat FOBs were light on amenities. He waved and kept on going at a steady 40 miles an hour, which put him next to the metal plant at exactly 6 o'clock in the morning, the start of the workday. The arena lights were already on, and the place was lit up bright and blue, like day. The parking lot was filling up fast. Headlights were streaming west out of town, dipping, turning, raking the rough ground, stopping, clicking off. Reacher parked neatly between a sagging Chrysler sedan and a battered Ford pickup. He slid out and locked up and put the keys in his pocket and joined a converging crowd of men shuffling their way toward the personnel gate. An uneasy feeling. Same sensation as entering a baseball stadium wearing the colors of the visiting team. Stranger in the house. All around him, guys glanced at him curiously and gave him a little more space than they were giving each other. But nothing was said. There was no overt hostility, just wariness and covert inspection, as the crowd shuffled along through the pre-dawn twilight a yard at a time. The personnel gate was a double section of the metal wall, folded back on hinges complex enough to accommodate the quilted curves of the wall's construction. The dirt path through it was beaten dusty by a million footsteps. Close to the gate there was no jostling, no impatience. Men lined up neatly like automatons, not fast, not slow, but resigned. They all needed to clock in, but clearly none of them wanted to. The line shuffled slowly forward. A yard, two, three. The guy in front of Reacher stepped through the gate. Reacher stepped through the gate. Immediately inside, there were more metal walls, head high like cattle chutes, dividing the crowd left and right. The right-hand chute led to a holding pen where Reacher guessed the part-time workers would wait for the call. It was already a quarter full with men standing quiet and patient. The guys going left didn't look at them. Reacher went left. The left-hand chute dog-legged immediately and narrowed down to 4 feet in width. It carried the line of shuffling men past an old-fashioned punch clock centered in a giant slotted array of time cards. Each man pulled his card and offered it up to the machine and waited for the dull thump of the stamp and then put the card back again. The rhythm was slow and relentless. The whisk of stiff paper against metal, the thump of the stamp, the click as the card was bottomed back in its slot. The clock was showing 6:14, which was exactly right, according to the time in Reacher's head. Reacher walked straight past the machine. The chute turned again, and he followed the guy in front for 30 feet and then stepped out into the northeast corner of the arena. The arena was vast, just staggeringly huge. The line of lights on the far wall ran close to a mile into the distance and dimmed and shrank and blended into a tiny vanishing point in the southwest corner. The far wall itself was at least a half mile away. The total enclosed area must have been 300 acres. 300 football fields. Unbelievable. Reacher stepped aside to let the line of men get past him. Here and there in the vastness, small swarms of guys were already busy. Trucks and cranes were moving. They threw harsh shadows in the stadium lights. Some of the cranes were bigger than anything Reacher had seen in a dockyard. Some of the trucks were as big as earth-moving machines. There were gigantic crushers set on enormous concrete plinths. The crushers had bright, oily hydraulic rams thicker than redwood trunks. There were crucibles as big as sailboats and retorts as big as houses. There were piles of wrecked cars 10 stories high. The ground was soaked with oil and rainbow puddles of diesel and littered with curled metal swarf, and where it was dry it glittered with shiny dust. Steam and smoke and fumes and sharp chemical smells were drifting everywhere. There was roaring and hammering, rolling outward in waves and beating against the metal perimeter and bouncing straight back in again. Bright flames danced behind open furnace doors, like a vision of hell. Some guys seemed to be heading for pre-assigned jobs, and others were milling in groups as if waiting for direction. Reacher skirted around behind them and followed the north wall, tiny and insignificant in the chaos. Way ahead of him, the vehicle gate was opening. 5 semi-trailers were parked in a line, waiting to move out. On the road, they would look huge and lumbering. Inside the plant, they looked like toys. The 2 security Tahoes were parked side by side, tiny white dots in the vastness. Next to them was a stack of 40-foot shipping containers. They were piled 5 high. Each one looked tiny. South of the vehicle gate was a long line of prefabricated metal offices. They were jacked up on short legs to make them level. They had lights on inside. At the left-hand end of the line, two offices were painted white and had red crosses on their doors. The first aid station. Next to it, a white vehicle was parked, the ambulance. Next to the ambulance was a long line of fuel and chemical tanks. Beyond them, a sinister platoon of men in thick aprons and black welding masks used cutting torches on a pile of twisted scrap. Blue flames threw hideous shadows. Reacher hugged the north wall and kept on moving. Men looked at him and looked away, unsure. A quarter of the way along the wall, his path was blocked by a giant pyramid of old oil drums. They were painted faded red and stacked 10 high, stepped like a staircase. Reacher paused and glanced around and levered himself up to the base of the tier, glanced around again and climbed halfway up the stack, and then turned and stood precariously and held on tight and used the elevation to get an overview of the whole place. He hadn't seen the whole place. Not yet. There was more. Much more. What had looked like the south boundary was, in fact, an interior partition. Same height as the perimeter walls, same material, same color, same construction, with the sheer face and the horizontal cylinder, same purpose as an impregnable barrier. But it was only an internal division with a closed gate. Beyond it, the outer perimeter enclosed at least another 100 acres, another 100 football fields. The gate was wide enough for large trucks. There were deep ruts in the ground leading to it. Beyond it, there were heavy cranes and high stacks of shipping containers piled in chevron shapes. The containers looked dumped, as if casually, but they were placed and combined carefully enough to block a direct view of ground-level activity from any particular direction. The internal gate had some kind of a control point in front of it. Reacher could make out 2 tiny figures stumping around in small circles, bored, their hands in their pockets. He watched them for a minute and then lifted his gaze again beyond the partition. Cranes and screens, some smoke, some distant sparks, some kind of activity. Other than that, nothing to see. Plenty to hear, but none of it was useful. It was impossible to determine which noises were coming from where. He waited another minute and watched the plant's internal traffic. Plenty of things were moving, but nothing was heading for the internal gate. It was going to stay closed. He turned east and looked at the sky. Dawn was coming. He turned back and got his balance and climbed down the oil drum staircase, stepped off to the rough ground, and a voice behind him said, "Who the hell are you?" Chapter 37. Reacher turned suddenly and saw 2 men. One was big and the other was a giant. The big guy was carrying a 2-way radio, and the giant was carrying a 2-headed wrench as long as a baseball bat and probably heavier than 10 of them. The guy was easily 6'6" and 350 pounds. He looked like he wouldn't need a wrench to take a wrecked car apart. The guy with the radio asked again, "Who the hell are you?" "EPA inspector," Reacher said. No reply. "Just kidding," Reacher said. "You better be." "I am." "So who are you?" Reacher said.
"You first. Who are you?"
"I'm the plant foreman. Now who are you?"
Reacher pulled the pewter star from his pocket and said, "I'm with the PD, the new deputy. I'm familiarizing myself with the community."
"We didn't hear about any new deputies."
It was sudden. The guy raised his radio to his face and clicked the button and spoke low and fast. Names, codes, commands. Reacher didn't understand them and didn't expect to. Every organization had its own jargon. But he recognized the tone and he guessed the general drift. He glanced west and saw the Tahoes backing up and turning and getting set to head over. He glanced south and saw groups of men stopping work, standing straight, preparing to move. The foreman said, "Let's go visit the security office." Reacher stood still. The foreman said,
A new deputy should want to visit the security office, meet useful folks, establish liaison.